Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It is easy to leave a burning building when it is on fire. But what if that building contains the very thing that gives you life, excitement, peace, joy, courage, and wonder? Will you be an agent of change, or do nothing and eventually leave? If you work in Catholic ministry, business, or education, and need quality content on your website or social media pages, contact The Simple Catholic for copywriting services at thesimplecatholic.blog and click on the writing services page for more information. The Church Militant needs soldiers against the enemy. Enlist The Simple Catholic in this fight for the truth. Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today.
Hey, good evening, my fellow truth seekers. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio 980, where everybody gets it. Welcome again to Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meet. Here tonight and every Monday night until 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Tonight, ladies and gentle things, together we delve beneath the surface on the topic of reason and sophistry, the difference between discovering truth and sounding good. And to assist us in this topic is my guest and yours, the one, the only, Mr. Bobbert LeBlanc.
Hey, Paul.
Howdy.
Howdy. How are you doing, Paul?
Fantabulous. It's nice being beneath the surface.
It is. You know, of course, I wanted to title this show Going Beneath the Surface on Going Beneath the Surface.
You did. Just to tell my audience, I usually ask my upcoming guest what topic he wants to he or she wants to do for the show. And Bob, it was your idea to come up with an idea about going beneath the surface on Beneath the Surface, but... Basically, you want to talk about the difference or the distinction between reasonable thought and discussion versus this thing called sophistry, which you're going to explain to the audience, and the difference basically between discovering truth and sounding good, right? Do I have that right?
That was a very good title selection, Paul.
Oh, good.
I think that covers it well, but I'm not going to be using the words you used. But I think it's a good summary.
All right. So before we delve into this topic, before we delve beneath the surface on this topic, first let me introduce our producer, Cynthia. How are you?
How you doing?
Fabulous. Now, does anybody ever call you that? What I just said?
Only when they're angry.
Okay. But
you're not angry, are you?
I'm not angry. No. But so every non-angry human calls you Cindy. Or a vinyl
That's
girl.
Correct.
Or vinyl girl. All right. So, Cynthia is an interesting name because you have that CY at the beginning. I always liked that. I always liked that difference of the English language spelling. Like Stephen, for example, instead of V, you got PH.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That is interesting. I've not understood the reasoning behind that.
But. Yeah. Yeah.
But people do that. Stephen.
Or Sophia is PH instead of F.
Oh, well, that's a really, really great word to bring up tonight.
Okay.
Sophia.
All right. Well, we'll get into that. But let me just introduce our BTS hotline, of course, is 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980 if you want to get involved in our conversation. We'd love to have you. And or you can just jot down anything you want relating to anything relating to Beneath the Surface on facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. That's facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. All right, Mr. Bob. Sophistry, what is it?
Well, I was sort of hoping you were going to do your kind of usual intro here.
What kind of intro is that?
This is we don't talk about surface issues and stuff like that.
Oh, you
like
want me to
soccer
do that? Oh, okay. Yeah, sometimes I do that little intro.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, I have it right in front of me. So, the BTS synopsis. Beneath the Surface is a unique talk show. We don't gab or whine about surface political issues, but delve beneath the surface on some of the more fundamental questions of life, knowing that dialogue that follows reason can lead to truth, as long as fear or bias do not hinder its path.
Didn't you used to bring up Socrates in your opening statement?
No.
No?
No. Socrates is all over my Facebook page for Beneath the Surface.
Okay.
But I don't think I mentioned it in the opening statement.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is the Socrates is really the beginning of Western philosophy.
Yeah,
I would say philosophy entire.
They were the pre-Socratics, but they didn't really make their mark like Socrates, who is nicknamed the father of reason.
Right.
Right.
I would buy that. I'm not sure if you heard the father of reason, but I've heard him referred to as the father of philosophy.
Yeah, you before Socrates, thinking and philosophical discussion was kind of not. It didn't follow reason in as much as, for example, the Iliad, the Odyssey, all of those poetic works were more metaphorical
they're kind of
mythological, all of that kind of stuff, which is good and important,
right?
But Socrates was considered the father of reason.
Yeah, Peter Kreeft, I remember he thinks of and I'm not sure if he's the only one, but that's where I picked it up from. Was he thinks that poetry is where the beginnings of philosophy came from?
The beginnings of human thought and human discourse, I think.
And you know, I'm not a very good poet or anything like that, but I do admire some poetry. But we did have, you know, Homer was a poet. So so you have whatever the correct mix that happened there in ancient Greece about 300 to 400 years before the birth of Christ.
Yeah.
And so the area that we're talking about is Athens, which is, you know, where we get our ideas about democracy. And and this is the situation for Socrates here. You have these people. They're called sophists.
Okay, they were popular in Socrates' day.
They were very, very popular in Socrates' day. You had these sophists and they would sell themselves. They would they would say, you know, I can teach you how to win debates, arguments. I mean, this is incredibly important if you want to influence the democracy. You know, you want to try to win debates.
You need to understand rhetoric.
You need to understand rhetoric, the thing was is that's what they focused on was winning the debates.
Winning debates rather than a mutually discovering truth together.
Right.
Okay.
And so this is the sort of thing that Socrates and his writer Plato were fighting against. They were fighting against this sort of beautiful language, you know, that these sophists were. It was good rhetoric in the sense that, you know, it would convince people.
Convincing, persuasive, beautiful rhetoric that's pretty much empty in content. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to convey.
So, in other words, Barack Obama in his election in 2008.
I didn't want to get into contemporary politics, right. But yeah.
Well, it's good to give people some kind of example of this.
Actually, I would say a good contemporary right now would be Donald Trump.
Okay.
But the thing is there's probably a little bit of a difference between them. The thing to, I guess, to understand about the Sophist is that they were considered to be wise people. This is where the word Sophist comes from. It comes from the word, the Greek word for wisdom.
Sophia, yeah.
And Socrates, if you go to his apology, he opens up as to why he did the things that he did. He had a friend go to an oracle, and the oracle claimed that Socrates was the wisest man around.
For those who don't know, why don't you just in a few words explain what an oracle was?
An oracle was kind of like a prophet. Is kind of close to what a prophet would be. They would predict sort of things, and they would say certain things as if it came from the truth, it came from some sort of spiritual or divine source.
Okay. So they were human beings, these oracles?
They were human beings, okay. These oracles. And so, you know, people would go to them for... I'm not sure if I understand the historical background on the oracles.
Okay. Well, they were the society's sages that were believed to get much of their wisdom from the gods at the time.
Yeah, I think in more modern speak, we might think of them as medicine men or maybe fortune tellers.
Okay, that kind of thing. Okay,
It's at that level. I mean, but I think. Very much the Greeks took these oracles very seriously.
Yes.
And Socrates took his oracle very seriously in the reverse sort of way. He set out to prove that he was not the wisest man in Greek.
It was an oracle, actually, that told Socrates that he was the wisest man in Greece, wasn't it?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. So Socrates went to disprove this because he thought he was the biggest fool in Athens.
Yes. Well, right. he didn't think that highly of himself. And to tell you the truth, I think that is a good step in avoiding sophistry in a personal fashion.
Have no ego?
Yeah, to take your ego out of any search for the truth.
Yes.
You do. I admit myself. You know, I've been at least more so in the past. I hope much less now. Is taking my ego out of of things where in the past I'm sure that, you know, I said I'd rather win an argument than arrive at the truth. You know, I think that's very common. That's a very common thing for people to fall into.
Well, that's part of our tainted human nature, I would imagine.
Right.
So, but now you're saying that you're much more interested in discovering truth dialogue.
With dialogue. I've got a...
So even when you dialogue with people you disagree with and they do the evil thing of, calling you names or derogatory things, are you at the point yet where you can continue to prod along and follow reason to the truth regardless of their insults?
I've always had the patience online.
Okay. Online patients.
I've had online patients.
How about in-person patients? Do you have any of that?
In-person patients, that's not been really tested all that well. I've talked to you before where I've had dialogue with family members, and for me that's a little bit different because there seems to be a high emotional underlying factor that's here.
Yeah, and you're just little Bob, you know?
I'm just little Bob.
Who are you to say anything?
Who am I to say anything? I feel much more comfortable on online dialogues and even now where I'm willing to engage in dialogues with opponents, even if they disagree. I mean, obviously, I'm saying they're opponents; they disagree, but
right.
I'm beginning to see the fruits of this search for truth, because even if they disagree with me, at the very least, I know that I learn something from them, even if it's saying I need to fashion my own thinking in a much more rigorous way.
Okay.
But often somebody will say something that is that rings true to me, that I would have to accept and I would have to modify my thinking to a certain extent.
So yeah. Well, that's what Socrates was into, right? He would discuss things with so-called experts and attempt to modify his own thinking according to their so-called expertise, but he often, or maybe always, by the end of the dialogue, felt empty.
Right. We have this now. I mean, that at least in law schools, I don't know if you ever saw The Paper Chase. I think it's The Paper Chase. It was a movie about lawyers in the 1970s, and the thing that they brought out of that is there was this one class that was the toughest class, and it was the class that the teacher brought out Socratic dialogue. These soon to be lawyers had to learn how to reason and defend what they thought, and this was all brought out in a Socratic dialogue where there's a kind of a questioning
of each other. Yeah, a question answer kind of moving forward together toward the ultimate goal, which is uncovering what they're trying to uncover, the truth about something.
It's very, very different from the lecture idea of teaching people.
I was never good at that. I never learned much by that. People yakking at you.
Yeah. but I'm learning to appreciate that more. I think these days students want just tell me what the truth is. I don't want to have to think and gather the truth for my own.
That is one of the saddest things about education today, and we'll talk about that right after the break, as well as the big difference in what we see today between reasonable dialogue and sophistry, which is more prevalent than you think out there. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at BTS Radio. That's my guest, Bob LeBlanc. I'm Paul Morano. Be back right after this, I promise. And we're back. 978-454-4980, our phone number here at Beneath the Surface Radio at WCAP, where everybody gets it. Mr. Bob, so before the break, we were talking about what?
Well, we were talking about Socrates and the Sophists.
Okay.
And I guess I wanted to finish up with the kind of the history with his trial. He was accused, actually, of being a Sophist himself.
Okay. Socrates was,
and the charge that they brought up was making the weaker argument the stronger argument, and I guess I should explain that a little bit. It's not a very good first. I guess it's a start into this. What making the weaker argument the stronger? They were saying he was making a weak argument better than what it should be.
Okay. What does that mean, better? Not better in content, I would imagine.
Not better than...
Sounding better.
Right. He was actually being accused of the thing that he was actually struggling against.
Okay. So he was fighting this sophistry, this flowery, political, correct, quote unquote inspiring kind of rhetoric that was all flowers and no substance.
Yes.
And he was being accused of that himself.
Right. All right. And he brought up a difference. He says, you know, I'm not getting paid for any of this stuff. You know, he would engage in dialogue with every, he didn't demand payment. Sophists, they actually demanded payment.
Okay.
And so there was that difference. Would you say
that sophists, by and large, would be considered what many would call BS artists?
Yeah, I would say that. And
their goal was to teach others their artistry.
Right.
That
was their job, to teach rhetoric. But it was, I think, by saying BS kind of indicates a kind of vulgar sort of thing. These guys, these sophists, they were actually educated.
Yes.
There's a certain level of education. I mean, we talk about education as a solution all the time, but these guys, they were educated well into the nuances of language, how to persuade, these various things in order to sound well. I mean, they had skill.
So basically, it's in order to sound well, in order to get your way.
Right.
All right. Nothing to do with in order to discover the truth so we all can conform to it.
That's the real thing.
Yeah, that's the difference we're talking about here. And to bring this into our day, this is humongous. Or as Trump would say, this is huge.
This is huge. It's related to, and I'm kind of struggling through this because I'm basing this through, I'm reading a book. Which is called The Abuse of Language, The Abuse of Power.
Okay.
So if I sound like I've made a total hash of this, I would actually recommend that book.
To our listeners.
To the listeners.
Read it again.
It's Abuse of Language, Abuse of Power.
Okay.
And it's by Joseph Pieper. He's a philosopher, Thomist. He lived in the early 20th century in Germany.
So basically, it's a book about manipulating people by your rhetoric.
Yeah, you're taking some of my words
to get
some
your
of my
way.
Thunder
okay,
here.
Forget it. No, okay, my thunder has dissipated. Go ahead, I'm all ears.
So he goes and tries to examine what these sophists are doing, and you know it's very difficult, I think, for people to actually. It takes a little bit of skill to kind of unwrap what the sophists are doing here. And the thing that struck me about what he was talking about, sophistry, is he was introducing sophistry or giving a definition of language that tied in very well with how I view the purpose of communication with respect to lying.
Okay.
There's I don't know if you remember our debate in the past or our discussion in the past about whether we should lie or not, and I brought up something that was called the perverted faculty.
Yeah, the argument about whether it's ever okay to lie,
whether it's
even
ever okay
even in situations
lie.
Where they might use the truth for great harm. Okay,
and the definition that he came up with, he said what the sophists are doing is that they're corrupting the word. They're corrupting the language.
Okay.
Another sort of thing I would say is they're what I think of nominalists as doing. You know, they're saying a word doesn't really attach to reality.
It doesn't have a particular meaning per se.
Yeah, it's a nominalist would say, you know, the meaning is all generated by
us. Right.
But a sophist would be a little bit different. A sophist is speaking in such a way that is divorced from reality. So the purpose of language, according to Pieper, is to convey reality. The purpose of the word is to convey some sort of reality.
Convey the truth, yeah.
Convey the truth, and there's this interpersonal aspect to this. You know, this is not just within my own individual mind that we're talking about. I want to convey some sort of truth from me to you. Something about the truth that is separate from us both, but we want to be able to talk about it.
And we as human beings have ideas, and we want to share them.
Right.
And we use language as that vehicle between your body and my body to share those ideas that aren't necessarily concrete, but they're real things.
Yes.
Okay.
These are real things, and what you're trying to do is, and what Socrates was trying to do is to have a real dialogue where there would be truth conveyed from one person to the other, or it would be discovered together, however that dynamic works. But there's some sort of connection between language and
And truth.
And truth and reality.
All right, now here's the problem today, all right? Many people, as you know, through all this, all these safe zones and colleges and political correctness and in the media and academia, people are very, very easily offended by truth today.
Yes.
So do you think that Socrates' way of looking at the world and using language, and by the way, this is how I use it, and I think you use language very similar to Socrates. Do you think this works today with a people who are so easily offended by the truth?
It has to shut down.
What do you mean by that?
With these safe zones, these things, not offending people, all these things, these are all stop signs to say, you know, no, I don't want to hear the truth that you have to convey.
And wouldn't sophistry be then very popular today with a people who are so denying reality?
Well, yeah, I think there's a little bit more into sophistry that I want to go to, but they've been trained somewhat. You know, people don't go into these colleges without certain premises, certain ideas about things, and they've not been made into what you would say a fellow truth seeker.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of ideology in schools, and they're presenting something. And I don't view ideology as something that is very closely connected to the truth. An ideology is kind of a model, a kind of a wishful thing. I wish things were this simple. This kind of way of thinking kind of explains everything, but it's.
So, in other words, it's a house of cards that we build,
right?
Rather than a magnifying glass that we try to discover,
right? Right.
So they're human constructs rather than human concepts,
right? They're ideas about the world, and somehow you get into a situation like in communism, which is a good ideology to point at. What happens if the plan fails? You know, or you start looking at things and you say, well, the people aren't fitting into this ideology very well. We're going to have to eliminate those people.
Yeah, and that's where violence comes in.
That's where the violence comes in. The people are not conforming very well to this ideology.
And you can't use reason with ideology because it's not based in the truth. It's based in one's own ideas of what should be the truth.
So Pieper goes on, and he's trying to examine what's going on here, and he identifies sophistry as actually a kind of a breakdown. Here, he talks about sophistry as a flattery. Now, it's not a flattery in the sense that I'm trying to say something pleasing to you, but it's more expansive. It's a flattery that manipulates. That's the sense that I want to use the word flattery, or the way that he uses the word flattery.
If with my language I can somehow get into your emotions or your heart to manipulate them, then I have you. Is that it?
Right. And what's breaking down here with this sophistry is the relationship between the speaker and the listener. You're no longer viewing your interlocutor, the other person that you're talking with or trying to dialogue, or apparently trying to dialogue with. You're no longer seeing that person as a person that you should respect as an equal of sorts.
So you're making them into an object for manipulation by the spoken word.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, so that was really popular back in ancient times. But I'm trying to invite you to tell us whether it's still popular today.
Very much so. I need to maybe go into the history of Joseph Pieper himself. He lived in Germany during the time of Nazi Germany, and he clearly saw what was happening in Socrates' time as happening in modern times. I mean, he saw a demagogue. He saw the manipulation of people that was happening through the Nazi Party, through Adolf Hitler. And so he saw, he actually asks in this book, don't think of this as a historical lesson that I'm trying to teach you. This, try to view this as something that is happening right now. And one of the things that he brought up that shone a light for me is he brought up commercials. Now
really?
Commercials are by example. They are a great example of sophistry. If you just look at some of these commercials, they're not really trying to use any sort of reason. They're trying to manipulate you into buying.
That's
something.
What marketing today is all about, isn't it?
Yes,
and in that respect, the salesman and the politician are very similar.
Yes, they are, because the politician is trying to sell himself.
In a way that they think you can be manipulated,
right?
not in a way that respects
the
truth.
There is very, very, very little respect for the truth, and I think we've reached a certain point in American dialogue, political dialogue, commercial dialogue, where the truth, does not matter.
You know, one of my favorite lines from Mother Teresa of EWTN. Is this, and it's a quote: those who love you will tell you the truth. Those who tell you what you want to hear, let me say it the right way this time. Those who tell you the truth love you. Those who tell you what you want to hear love themselves. Let me repeat that. Those who tell you the truth love you. Those who tell you what you want to hear love themselves.
Okay, unpack that. I'm intrigued by that.
Right after this break.
All right.
Cindy's telling me we need to take a break. So we'll do that really quickly. And we'll continue our conversation on reason versus sophistry here at WVCN. Where did that come from?
I don't know.
I haven't listened to that station since I was a teenager back in the 70s. WCAP Radio 980 on your dial. I promise that's where we are. WCAP in Lowell, where everybody gets it, including Cindy, our producer. We'll be right back. We're back. Back we are. We are back. Or are we back?
We're back. I hope we're back.
Well, we haven't gone anywhere. We've been sitting here for the past 45 minutes.
All right.
So we're not back. They're back.
Okay.
All right. Just wanted to make that clear.
I don't know. That may be a little bit of sophistry there.
I'm sorry. 978-454-4980, our phone number here at Beneath the Surface. Here it's 11 o'clock, so let's get on with it. We're talking about the topic of reason versus sophistry.
You were going to unpack
human
that
language.
Thing by Mother
All right.
Angelica.
All right, let's do a little unpacking. Mother Angelica's quote, and I'll say it again. Those who tell you the truth love you. Those who tell you what you want to hear love themselves.
Mm.
Does that ring true to you at all?
It rings true, but this is only by intuition. I'm not seeing the reasons behind this.
I don't think I have ever seen her explain it, so I'll just give you my intuitive reasons why I think it's good. People who don't have the courage to tell you the truth fear the ramifications of telling the truth, and hence, because they're intimidated or they fear ramifications for telling the truth, which of course is the only way for the person to better themselves, then they're more interested in their own good rather than the person's good. For example, the very popular example that I think Geico and maybe other commercials had as a funny skit in it. The wife comes into the room, the husband's watching television or something, and the wife says, "Honey, do I look fat in this dress?"
Uh-huh.
And the husband sort of just looks down. He doesn't even look at her and says, "You betcha." And then all of a sudden, the narrator's voice said, "By the time you can take out the sleeper sofa, you would have saved 15% on your car insurance."
Uh-huh.
But
You know, that's the classic excuse that people give for lying.
For lying, yeah. But what I'm saying here, I think what Mother Angelica is communicating with her saying here is that if you were to say, yeah, you look fine in that dress, you look great, and she actually does look horrible in that dress, she is not bettered by your lie or your untruth. In fact, it might make her much worse off, right?
Right. They don't know. They're not giving the signal to improve. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to get at. The truth is the only way for the person to better themselves.
Right. Either physically or actually intellectually.
Or any kind of way.
Right.
But if I'm afraid of the ramifications of saying it, I'm loving me. I'm caring about me, not the other person. And I think that's what she was trying to get at.
Right. And I can see where it's not love when you lie to someone or you detach from reality in sophistry. You're not like we said earlier, or I said earlier, is you're treating the other person as something to be manipulated. You want some sort of reaction out of the person.
Or, with Mother Angelica saying, you just don't want to deal with the ramifications of telling the truth.
Right.
So you're either trying to manipulate them, or you're trying to avoid
heartache for yourself.
Necessary heartache for yourself, though. Yeah. It's what sacrifice is all about, right?
Right. There is something that I didn't mention earlier on, and I don't want to paint the sophistry as totally empty of content, in because it certainly is true that sophistry does lack content. You're not conveying anything to the person that is useful if you're engaging in sophistry, but there is this component to sophistry where the reasons are given and they appear to be reasonable.
Yes.
I mean,
at least to the shallower mind, it appears to be the right reasons.
Well, I think even to a more sophisticated mind, I think there is some really good sophistry. I think these days we're more prone to sophistry, where you don't have to be a skilled sophist as much as maybe in the earlier 20th century, people had a much stronger philosophical base than they do now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Because people don't have that philosophical base, they're very easily manipulated by apparently good reasons.
Yes, but I'm saying sophistry could still happen even in the better days.
Okay.
This is not something that would go away if everybody became very good philosophers. I think, you know, there's always going to be this temptation for people to try to manipulate people, and of course now with commercials and political campaigns, it's a science trying to manipulate people.
Right.
They know what buttons to push to manipulate people.
Yes, and what will work for them with you.
Right.
Rather than just being genuine and honest and letting the voters decide.
And I think really we've seen quite a bit of this sophistry in what we would both term the sexual revolution.
Okay, expound on that a little?
Well, I mean, for me, I see very, very clearly, this idea about contraception. You know, that contraception is wrong because it separates the procreative aspect, and I think most people understand that from the unitive purpose of the conjugal act or the marital act.
Union and bonding, from babies, yeah.
Yes, union and bonding, and very, very early on, people were going, well, what's so wrong about separating these two things?
Right.
And if you had thought deeply about it, or at least beneath the surface, not so deep.
Yeah, that's why we're here.
You would understand that if you separate these two aspects of the marital act, then any sexual act becomes permissible.
It would have to.
There's no real you know,
logic would demand,
right,
that would be the case. If you de-link the two essential properties, which is bonding from babies or the union from the procreation, then you can use yourself in any way that you desire.
Yeah, and I think an interesting thing is happening now. Yeah. I mean, the hookup culture is making the news these days.
It is.
And one of the problems is that in order to say something is morally wrong, we're left to resort to a non-consensual thing. So what's happening now is that suppose two college students are drinking or something like that.
Yeah.
And a horrible sort of thing happens. Then they have to say that this is rape.
Okay.
You know, we've lost the ability to distinguish the things that were formerly objectionable to particular acts.
I think what you're saying is now it boils down to the only ethical principle there is left today is the notion of adult consent.
Right.
If there is no consent, it was a morally wrong act. If there was a consent, whether that consent is to abuse or to anything else that is bad for the person or wrong for the person, it's still morally okay in this way of thinking.
Right. Right. But that really doesn't hold true. And putting alcohol into the mix makes a lot of things fuzzy about whether there was consent or there was not consent.
Okay.
And a classic example of this, and I'm not approving of this, but this was actually said. Whoopi Goldberg was trying to explain how Roman Polanski,
yeah,
didn't do such a bad thing. She said he didn't rape.
He didn't. Oh, the double.
It was a double.
I didn't realize there was a.
she was trying to say it wasn't really the rape that we view, like the violent rape sort of thing.
Oh,
he just seduced a 14-year-old girl with alcohol and drugs.
I see.
And so there was no. This is not really rape. And of course, that doesn't really gel with what a lot of people are saying nowadays. You know, it says if the person is drunk, it's impossible for them to consent. Therefore, it's rape.
I see.
And so there's this kind of, you know, struggle that's happening, and there's a lot of moral shaming that's going on with respect to this topic. There's a lot of political correctness, a lot of pressure to bear. So if you think like a woman has been victimized by a guy,
okay,
then you need to say that this is a rape.
Yeah.
You can't say that she's been victimized by simple fornication thing that transpired.
Yeah. As long as you consent, there is no victims.
Right. Okay. As long as you consent.
All right. So I agree. I think this is... this is a very dangerous way of moral thinking today. It's based on basically that we create our own morality, and there is no right and wrong in certain things. As long as you consent, everything is fine. It's absurd, but it's the norm today. Here's my question to you. What does sophistry have to do with that?
Well, the sophistry comes in is that it's not tied to reality. What my argument would be is I want to use words that accurately explain what occurred between the two people, that act that happened.
Okay.
And if you say consent is the only thing
that matters ethically, yeah,
then you run into these contradictions that make people very, very angry. So you run into this sort of don't tell me the truth kind of things. We've got people conditioned into wanting the sophistry. They want the flattery. They don't want to hear the horrible truths that are happening. The very serious problem with the hookup culture itself.
I see. All right.
So we're living in
so they're focusing solely on the consent, and in this case that was in the news the last week, you know, maybe I don't know, I did not read about it, so it seems to me a cut and dry case that it's probably rape. But forget that case. What you're saying is that people are willing to use language to couch or to obscure a reality that
right.
This particular culture of hookup is bad for people, very bad for people, regardless of whether they consent or not.
Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing?
It's
language enables us to continue this false narrative in our lives.
Well, yeah, we're political correctness is, or the safe areas, the zones is trying to keep us away from this truth, and the thing that I don't want to argue whether somebody was a victim or not a victim. What I want to argue for is actually having descriptive language that accurately describes the truth of the situation that's going on, and especially when we're talking about moral truths, it creates a certain dynamic of you know, did the person actually say the right thing, rather in the sense of you know, did you say the politically correct thing or not, which seems to be less important than saying did you actually speak the truth
right.
or not.
I'm laughing because that is so true, particularly with political debates, but what transpires between human beings on a daily basis. It's like, did you say what you're supposed to say in order to fit the narrative, rather than were you actually genuine in telling the truth?
Right.
Those are two very different things.
We have a presidential candidate right now who I see who's busting down the political incorrectness, but he's also rude in such a way that he's not doing it for, he's not breaking down political correctness for the truth. He's doing it out of his own personal self-satisfaction. Maybe it makes him look, he feels it makes him look better as a candidate if he insults people and is rude to other people. You know, it seems like we're caught into this like binary. There's one side of political correctness, which it doesn't care about the truth, and there's this other side of rudeness that doesn't care for the truth either.
And unfortunately, Trump is a reaction to the Clinton Obama politically correct progressive nonsense of the past 40 years, and so he went so overboard that it's to an extreme which doesn't help the situation at all. But it's almost expected that it happened. It's almost inevitable.
That I guess I'm hearing the music, and I think I would just love to say that the thing that's so important to me is philosophy, which is the love of wisdom, the love of truth. That should be the most important thing for people these days.
If you don't love truth more than your life itself, then life is not worth living for you.
I believe that's true, Paul.
It's absolutely true.
I don't want to live in a world that is full of lies.
Thank you, Mr. Bobberts. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface. That was Bob LeBlanc. I'm Paul Morano. Listen to us every Monday night, 10 to 11, for a different topic each week. Next up, Cindy's Vinyl Vaults. You can't miss Cindy's Vinyl Vault this week. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, and a great week, actually. See you next week.
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at catholicsingles.com. kaneford.com. Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at kaneford.com.